Hi, and welcome back to another week with the Geek Whisperers. I'm Amy Lewis.
I'm Matt Brender.
And I'm John Mark Troyer.
And we are back with a very special guest on our ongoing topic about social selling. Somebody who is both social and in sales. What a concept. So, Scott Hansen, come on down. Woo!
Woo! Thanks for having me, everyone.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself for people who don't know you. Where do you live and reside on Twitter? How can we stalk you in the future? And what are you doing these days?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am the infamous, or however you want to say it, Cisco Server Geek on Twitter. That's where I do most of my social engagement. I actually live in Austin, Texas. I am a pre-sales engineer for Cisco's data center products, actually covering the state local education customers. A lot of fun.
Because I know this, I'm going to prompt the crowd. You have been engaged on social platforms for quite a while.
I think she just called you old.
I have a lot of gray hair. But it's still here.
True story, confessional, since I'm into them this week, apparently, is Scott is one of the very first people I got to know in the community way back when. So we're both in this together. We're equally as young or as old as the audience may think we are.
Yes, those 1200 baud modems. It was so awesome.
So, yeah, what can you give me a little bit about, again, about your journey? Were you on social early? Were you an early adopter?
Yeah, I would say I was on social early back in my career at Dell, 2006, 2007-ish, shortly after Twitter came online. I worked in a place called the Dell Tech Center, where we were originally chartered with just writing articles in magazines, did a lot of testing, and a magazine came out quarterly. And then there was a few of us that said, hey, this is ridiculous. There's this thing called the internet, and we should be able to publish this stuff right away, and we should be able to get feedback on it. And so that created DellTechCenter, .com. So now I'm at Cisco promoting some other property. But that led to us and a couple of the guys, Todd Muirhead, who's big in the community at VMware now. We said, hey, we're going to VMworld. We need to have this Twitter thing. So we actually shared a Twitter account the first time we went to VMworld, which is not so fun, actually, if you guys that are in Twitter know how that works. So that's kind of how I got my feet wet. And then we chartered ourselves with creating a wiki to help customers, you know, glom together on that property. And then that led into, hey, we also need to blog and we also need to tweet and we got paid for it. So it was a lot of fun. That's where I, you know, kind of cut my teeth, learning the ropes in some of the great, you know, Dell people that did a lot of that stuff.
Is Twitter still the main place you are hanging out these days, Scott?
Twitter. Yes. So I spend the majority of my time on Twitter. I would say that's where I am most active. I'm since I left the previous company, right? I don't have a calendar where I have to keep blogs up to date. So that means your blogging kind of falls to the wayside. If you look at some of my posts. So I use my blog for more of things that I need to promote to my customers, right? With stuff that I don't want to have to repeat. So I'm, you know, uber active on Twitter more than I am anything else. And I like it a lot because I like the quick conversations. I like the wit. I like the banter back and forth.
Hey, quick tactical question. At one point in your previous life, you were Dell Server Geek, and now you are Cisco Server Geek. You care to address the pros and cons of having your company handle or your company name in your handle?
Well, so you definitely gain more traction with the company name in the title, right? It just kind of comes from people searching for, you know, specific company stuff. I'd say I actually don't like that now. I would like for it to be, you know, more me. I meet a lot of people at, you know, VMworld and whatnot, and I'm like, hi, I'm Scott Hansen, and they really don't even have a clue. It just kind of, you know, whatever. And then 5 minutes later into the conversation, somebody will, you know, talk to me as Cisco Server Geek or something, and then their eyes will light up like, oh my God, you know, you're the guy I've been talking to. And I'm like, Yeah. That's me. That's why we need to have Twitter handles on our lanyards and all that stuff. But, you know, I actually contacted the guy that has at Scott. And, you know, if I ever leave somewhere, I'll put that in a contract where it says the company will have to buy at Scott for me. he wanted $5,000, which, you know, at the time, this was, I think, a year and a half ago. And I was like, it's funny that I actually thought about paying him that money.
I've heard from other people that have short Twitter handles, though, that it's more of a curse than a blessing because you get a lot of erroneous ad mentions.
Yeah.
So at Stu has to be the shortest handle I know.
Yeah, I think Stu gets a lot of that.
Hey, Scott, so have you always come from a sales background? It sounds like you were doing some technical side of the house, and I know you brought social into the mix as it became relevant. I was wondering if those two stories are connected, that you kind of you left the more technical and went towards sales as social became a tool, or if I'm just correlating things that aren't related.
Yeah, I've always been technical, and I've basically always done the same role. Very early before I started my career, I was doing bulletin boards and online connecting right that way. So all the Twitter, social media, blogging stuff just sort of came natural. It was like, hey, this is what we've done before. And it's a lot of fun, right? You have a lot of fun with communities of people that are like-minded. So it just naturally, you know, rolled into a, hey, you know, people said you interact with customers very well. You should be doing some, you know, salesy stuff instead of all this technical stuff. So I always stayed the pre-sales thing. Been a couple opportunities to go full sales, but I think that's a whole different personality, right? That's the, when I think of a full sales guy, I think of a slick back hair dude, you know, cheesy Corvette driving guy. And I mean, some people might see me that way, but I don't see myself that way internally, which is weird because, you know, I'm a big, tall, sort of athletic guy that doesn't do any sports, which is an oxymoron.
No, it's great to connect those dots. And also, I hope one day that we have somebody in the sales organization that has done that without slick back hair or has slick back hair and also a personality in our industry and using social in an interesting way.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of...
We can all dream, right?
Someday. We can dream. I hate to pigeonhole everybody, but you know, they're so self-centered and they don't have much empathy, and they talk like they're so friendly, but you know, I mean, it's that sales thing.
So you're saying that when you're doing social selling, you can't be all about me back to me?
It's always about me, but you have to fake it, right? Well, no, it's never. I mean, it's never, right? It's never about you when you're selling. You have to put yourself in the customer's shoes and think about what their challenges are and what their problems are and really think about customer service. I think we've lost a lot of customer service. And that's from my days. I used to work at a hardware store, and it was a hardware store where you were customer service to the nth degree, right? And you had to help everybody figure out, right, how to build pole barns and how to, you know, lay out their deck. And it was just very, very personable, right? And I'm very sad because now in the big box days of the bigger hardware stores, you don't see that anymore, right? The people that work there just don't know what's going on. And that really drives me. I mean, I am big about customer service. And to me, you know, connecting with people on Twitter and keeping conversations going is, you know, letting them know that you care and that you're around and, you know, you want to help them solve a problem.
That's interesting. That's one of Amy's things that she's brought up a couple times in her, and I think I agree with it, that she finds that people who are either comfortable at social or good at social for business purposes often have some sort of a customer service background or service industry background in their work history. So I think you're another confirming data point, Scott.
I worked my way all the way up to the service desk, and I loved everything about that job except for the let me relate this story. Everybody in their history, I think, has a, oh my gosh, I shouldn't have said that, come out of their mouth, right?
Oh, do tell.
So I am helping this woman, and she asks all about this paint and, you know, will it work for the wall? You know, will it basically, you know, is it great paint? And I'm like, yeah, you know, it's awesome. And she is standing next to a 5-gallon bucket of paint. And we finish our conversation and she goes to lift the paint bucket up. And I say, oh, no, let me help you with that because I'm good with customer service, right? You shouldn't lift that in your condition.
Oh.
She was a little bit larger woman, and I assume she was pregnant. No, not at all. That's, you know, I think all men do that once in their, just once in their life.
Only once,
and that was my one time. I didn't get the customer service pin of the month award, so
I'd have gotten it, but just not maybe affixed where it was more appropriate. So, and I think that's an interesting sort of jump off point. We're kind of talking about this in these large ways, but what do you see sort of, where do you see things evolving? We're hearing some about where things were. Where do you think social selling is now? Before we started recording, you were telling us a little bit about, you know, about maybe your process or kind of how you go about it, how you go about the art and the craft.
And you know what? I'm just going to jump in and preface that Scott, you've made it clear before and so far during that you don't really see yourself as, you know, quote unquote, on the social selling track, right? That it's gained a lot of popularity lately. Nevertheless, you are very much good at social selling as a paradigm, and as those that listened to the last episode with Jill have begun to understand. So if just feel free to leapfrog that and just tell us about your experience in the selling process and how you use social to engage with people.
No, yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a good point, Matt, that social selling or whatever social word we put in front of anything eventually just becomes commonplace, right? I don't see it as social selling. I see it as relationship building using technology, right? Using tools, using Twitter, using Facebook. And these are tools that I think that any competent salesperson will eventually just have to own and use and realize that it's just another way to make connections. Right. It's the same thing when I used to work and had to do blog posts and write papers and do demos. The skill, we used to hire people and ask for a skill of video editing. Right. And I think now that skill, the way that people do, you know, things on blogs and the way that YouTube has taken off, that everybody knows how to use a video editing tool. Right. Just like I would say 20 years ago, 25 years ago, you used to have to have word processing as a skill. Right. So social selling, I think just it will eventually spin itself into a normal way of doing business, right. Of keeping connections up. Right. My whole process with it is very simple. Right. I have my Twitter name on my business card. Right. And a lot of people I talk to, they're like, wow, what, you did that? What, how did you do that? Well, when you order business cards, you just freaking put it in there, right? I mean, you don't ask for you never ask for permission, right? You just do it. I still can't. And I think that comes with age also. When you've been in the business long enough, you're like, I'm going to do whatever it takes to do my job. I don't care what somebody puts in front of me.
Pro tip, right? There's always a line. There's always an extra line for the address or what once was the fax number or whatever else. There's always a blank space on a business card to put the Twitter handle.
And
I want to jump into that narrative and just pull out one thing you said in particular, which was, I'm just doing what I need to do to keep the relationships upright. And I think that is so, 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 so key. Because again, if we've got self-loathing marketers here, I'm just making fun of Matt, then we can have non-sales salespeople. Because right now, clearly we're a self-loathing group of individuals here on the fringe. But You see this, again, walking away from the tag of social selling, clearly you're telling us you see this as this is necessary to form relationships, to continue to do the business I'm in.
Absolutely. And everybody's selling, right? Whether you have a sales role or not, everybody is selling because you're creating awareness for their product and you're creating some type of relationship, right? I mean, I believe in that wholeheartedly.
So that's interesting. That drives to the question that everyone knows I'm going to ask, and that is, what is your KPI? What is your business objective? How are you measured? Is it more
related? There's something like a podcasting duck that comes down to make a Groucho Marx reference, we need that when Matt talks about metrics.
I really am quite curious because you mentioned that you're pre-sale, so we know you're on the technical side, we know you're in the sales cycle. I still don't know quite where you fit in the process and whether you're helping validate a fit for a customer, and whether you're kind of connected to like whether success is like helping somebody get the sale or validating that something fit.
Well, so if we can spin off into, you know, what a pre-sales technical role is, right? And that's a really good thing for probably a lot of listeners who are maybe just SEs and they want to spin into that type of role. What it really means is, right, I'm partnered with a real salesperson and I am their technical arm that helps early on in the sales process of identifying opportunities and then going in and a lot of whiteboarding, a lot of explaining what the technology is, a lot of showing how it's different from competition. And then that spins into proof of concepts, showing demos, right? Doing anything it takes to win the hearts and minds of the technical crowd while the salesperson and the account executives are working, right, with either C-level executives or directors and, you know, sometimes managers to try to push down, right? We attack it from both ends, right? That any pre-sales technical person will tell you that, right? We're winning the hearts and the minds of the people in the trenches that are, you know, ingrained in, oh, I don't want to change, I like the tools I'm using, all that, while everybody else is pushing from the top down. And somewhere in the middle, we come together, right?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So is social, in the sense of like X amount of tweets or a certain amount of reach or any of that, related at all to what people expect in your current role? Or is that something that you just consider an advantage?
So it's an advantage. It's an advantage over my peers, right? So yeah. If I look at what I'm measured against, I'm not measured against anything that I do on social media, right? But what I am measured against are other objectives that can give me quarterly bonuses, right? Where I can tie all this stuff together and say, hey, look what else I did to increase my sphere of influence around this technology. And right, look how I'm connecting and doing all this. And you know, I've been on my third manager now in 4 years, and every single time, right, I have to tell these people what I'm doing in my spare time, right? Because I consider this spare time. Right. And they're always impressed. They're always like, oh my gosh, I had no idea. I had no idea that, you know, everybody at, you know, VMworld likes you, and that people like to talk to you, and that you're doing this stuff, and that when you tweet out that a Cisco UCS firmware update is out, that it gets a million retweets, right?
Hey, Scott, do you think that being a solo practitioner here, doing this in your quote unquote spare time, is that the optimum way of doing it? Or do you think we're headed toward a world where some of this comes from sales management down? And if so, are they going to screw it all up?
They'll definitely screw it up. for how I work, it's optimal, right? I like to not be micromanaged. I believe that I'm a professional and I can do my job without somebody telling me what metrics to hit or what, you know, KPIs I need to hit. It's not and that's just me. But I think a lot of other people are different. I would probably blog more if I had some top down. Hey, you need to get that on a blog. You need to get that out. We got a deadline. Without those, I really don't. You know, I do blog posts when it, you know, makes sense for me for stuff that I need. But that's my opinion. I think social in these types of roles, everybody has to be social. You can't not be social. You won't be a top performer.
Well, and I was going to ask, like, have you found that to be the result? Do you feel like you get left alone within management chains or praised because of it? Do coworkers and colleagues kind of ask you for the secret sauce? What's been your experience?
Yeah, so you get the praise, but you have to sell yourself with your management, right? Since they're not driving anything, you have to put it all together. And you know, every quarter I have a meeting with my manager, and I make sure that I say, you know, this is what I've accomplished, and here's some of the things on social media that I've accomplished. And then your peers look to you and they're like, well, holy crap, why did you get the whatever? And then you talk to them about it, and they're like, well, yeah, help me get better, right?
And do you make time to help people get better?
Absolutely.
That wasn't a witch trial.
I understand what you say, because there's some things you don't want to help people get better at, because then they'll get there's only a certain bucket of, in the sales side, right? There's only a certain bucket of money, and if you help people get better, then they're going to get the bucket of money before you do, and that's a sales mentality, though.
Well, yeah,
That's a slick back hair guy mentality.
It is. There's two angles to that, right? There's the, all right, is there a default reaction to kind of protect this asset that you've built for yourself? And then there's also does your org chart, does your team empower you to spend some of your time teaching others to help them be better at the strategy that's clearly like advantageous and also respected at your company?
Yes.
Yes. Exactly, and that's really quite interesting. I can think of examples of people I've spoken to that they're either in orgs that they don't get that, so they don't get that same sort of support system, or that they might come from a more salesy mentality and hold that closer to their chest as like, it's my special super secret, not yours to share. But I think that really that shows like where you come into this social sphere from, which also what keeps you in there, that you are part of this quote unquote community building aspect of it, where people share the skills that they have to make everyone a little better, and we all kind of continue to rise to the occasion together.
Yeah, community and sharing is what makes the top performers perform in this space, right? So that's natural. But I guess sort of getting back to John's question of, you know, do I see – I mean, one of the reasons I left Dell was there was too much top-down command and control, right, over what you were doing. And right, what started out as a really fun job became a lot of – you know, mundane work that really didn't matter to the customers. And when that starts to happen, I, you know, just totally lose faith in what's going on. It's drove me away.
Makes sense.
I hate to be negative on a call, but I mean, you get a lot of, that's what happens, right? Companies, upper level executives are big about building process, right? That's what they do. They create machines that churn things through and have a repeatable process. And when you try to take somebody that's a personality and grind it through a machine to get more of those personalities through the machine, it doesn't work.
Yeah. It's tough, speaking as someone who's had to be on the other side and implement programs and process, right? It is tough because you're trying to give guidelines, you're trying to do training. You're trying to support people without turning everybody into a robot. And I don't think I ever found the sweet spot, but you know, it's tough on both ends, right? It's tough from the program implementation end as well.
Oh yeah. I mean, and you know, I understood from my manager with the pressures he was getting, and yeah, it's hard on both sides.
Well, it's the whole, can you train unicorns, you know, are unicorns bred or born? So,
yeah.
Yes.
I think the verdict's still out on our mythical colleagues.
You can breed some, but everyone is their own particular type of pony. Some people might be Sparkle Pony. Some people might be Princess Pony. Some people might be Rainbow Pony.
What other kind of ponies are there, John? Please tell us.
I don't know. I think I may have said too much already.
I think we found the brony.
So, before we go too far down the pony path, Scott, and I know, again, I'm bugging you for some things I've heard you say before, but I loved what you were talking about for people who have got their ears perked now and are hearing about how you kind of bring this into your daily process. And though it takes kind of selling in again and again to management up the chain, that colleagues get it and want to do what you're doing and how much energy you get from it. So What are some of your practical tips for how to get started? Kind of maybe some of the tools that you favor. Give us some of your secret sauce. What would you say to us?
Yeah, so I keep it very simple. So like I said, I have my Twitter handle on my business card, and I hand that out everywhere, old school with business cards. And what I find is then after the fact, I go home and or on my phone on the way home, I see who just started following me, right? And then I can identify, oh, this was a customer I just came from, right? This is XYZ customer. Let me make sure I follow him back. Let me make sure I said, hey, it was great to meet you today. Just a standard, you know, relationship, trying to build a relationship. And then I'll group those. So I just use, right, Twitter, iPhone app. I'm an iPhone user, and I use TweetDeck on my Mac, and that's it, right? And I set up columns where I'm searching for keywords, and then I also group these people, right, because you guys know the whole follower conundrum, right? So I group these people so I can know that they are, right, people I've met in person and that they're customers. And then, you know, I just make sure that, you know, feed them, water them, you know, send them interesting things from time to time and interact with them one-on-one. And then eventually I let them into the inner circle, right? And all of my big accounts, I have friends, right, real friends inside these accounts. And by inner circle, I mean I let them on Facebook, right? I consider Facebook my inner circle of people. And once they're on Facebook, it's and some people find that strange, right? They're like, you let customers to your Facebook. Well, I don't think of them as customers at that point, right? At that point, they're my friends. And I have friends from the previous job and the job before, right, that are still connected. And, you know, that's it's a different kind of relationship, but you become the uber trusted advisor, right? I mean, there's probably nothing I can't, you know, do or say with these people and be completely honest with them. And, you know, they may or may not buy some of the stuff that we're selling at the time, but it's a long sales cycle, especially in SLED. I mean, I've had, you know, 2 and 3 year sales cycles that finally hit. But if I hadn't maintained the relationship and really – that's how I view some of the social stuff, is just maintaining the relationship. If I hadn't maintained that, you know, we never would have got the sale.
Wow. No, that's really...
It's got process written all over it, Scott. I'm going to have to document this, considering we work in the same company. Yeesh. I mean, I love your kind of rule. One rule another person had shared with me before was for Facebook, Facebook was for people he wanted to sit down and either have a beer or a meal with. You know, that there was a Twitter line and a Facebook line. So I love that you've got a transitional process as well, and that, you know, you kind of go up this hierarchy and then you're into this place of trust where, like you said, it really is more about maintaining the relationship and the sales will fall out of it, that you don't have to slick back your hair.
Yeah.
Get the job done.
Yeah. And then you turn that into doing a lot of stuff in physical events, right? You make sure you get together if they're at the same conference. Right. You actually do V beer events, right? You have to do something, right? So I'm big about every couple of months making sure that we have something in Austin going on, you know, a V beers or just some kind of get together after a V mug, you know, and make sure that all these people are invited, right? Do the, I call the like loco, silco, broco kind of thing, which, excuse whatever.
You got to break that one down.
I gotta break that down. So, you know, it's local and it's social and it's SoCo because of South Congress. That's an Austin thing. And then BroCo, man, big, they're bros, even though they're, you know, men and women, they're all bros. So loco, all SoCo, BroCo, baby. That's right.
I think that definitely echoes the kinds of stuff we've heard over the months of this podcast and that we know from experience, right? The social stuff is glue that glues together offline experiences, and it works in isolation, but it really is synergistic with actually meeting other human beings.
Well, and I just had the light bulb moment, John, when you said that, because we've definitely trod that ground before, but I realize now if you talk about the haters and maybe people who ask you, Scott, to re-explain yourself all the time, or people like, why are you wasting your time, etc. What they seem to be missing is exactly is exactly that, that it is actually a more efficient, and for a lot of us who maybe work remotely or have to travel, or it's just efficiency. I guess I come back to that word. It's the most efficient way we can manage those kinds of relationships and have any kind of sincere connection, and then have the energy and time to go engage with people in person. So, to say, you know, oh, the real life stuff is more important, I get how that could inadvertently feed the flames of someone who just doubted this way of doing business, but it means that they have longer gaps. Either they have to commit to more in real life things, or they have longer gaps. Again, Captain Obvious thought, but it really just struck me when you said that.
All of this technology has always been about connecting people together. I don't care whether it's bulletin boards. I don't care anything that's now. I think 20 years from now, everything is just about creating connections with people, because at the end, that's all we have. That's all there is relationships with people. I don't care what the glue is going to be now or in the future. There's going to be, right, some other new app or cool thing, a piece of technology, but at the end of the day, it's going to be connecting some people or groups of people together. That's all it ever does, ever.
That's a drop the mic moment.
Yeah, drop the mic.
Jeez. Oh, shit, I lost my train of thought. I'll shut up.
Well, you know, and I don't need another, and then I'll do the other thing of, I don't need another app to connect me with the same people I'm talking to, right?
Oh, that's a very good line. I think that needs to go on a t-shirt.
Yeah, give me another app to talk with the same people I'm already talking to on all the other apps. I mean, what's the point? That's why I keep it simple. What you ask me, what tools I use, I'm on Twitter and I'm on Facebook.
Well, here's one for you, Scott. It's another common question / dismissal of social that can come up. Do you ever get in a situation where you feel obligated to not push the sale in a way that might benefit the company in the next quarter, even to try to maintain a relationship you formed? Like, do you feel, I guess, said in a really negative way that I would not be, but just to play up the stereotype here, do you ever play in favor of the person as opposed to the company you're working for?
That's an interesting question. I do tell people all the time not to buy some stuff, right? Which is horrible to say, and my salesperson will probably be listening and say, what? But they've seen me in meetings, right? If it's not right for the customer, it's not right for the customer. I wouldn't say that I favor a customer relationship over the company. Well, let me phrase that another way. I do value relationships more than I value the company. Right. But that's not to say that I'm going to detriment the company. Right. But my first thing will be what's right for this customer. Right. Never what's right for the company.
And that's an important differentiator that I think any.
It's long term versus transactional.
You'd be shocked to find out. I mean, how much people would be willing to bet the long term on transactional and just hope that they have more people to transact with in the future.
Well, interesting. I almost wonder if people then think about social selling in that way, Matt. We've come full round. I think it's like with anything. If you don't have the heart, if you don't have the person behind the tools don't mean a damn thing.
Yeah. Well, and I think I bought Sea Monkeys once. And then I found out that they were little ugly shrimp, and I never bought them again. So there is something to be said for being a long-term advisor.
Those dang marketing people, that was the best marketing ever.
Sometimes
they had little crowns. It was a whole family. I actually thought the lady sea monkey was kind of hot.
John, you're drunk.
This is the best episode ever. John keeps whipping
she,
up.
She them. Was hot. You didn't have a big enough microscope.
Anyway,
so Scott, any practitioner tips? Say, I don't know, make up the person that you think is most common in your head, whether that's a technical friend that's been scared to jump into social, or a salesperson that you think could do better at social. Any tip or thing that, like, one liner that comes to mind that you think would resonate with them?
Be yourself. That's so trite, but it's so true. right? Be yourself. I think early on, right, Todd and I made the mistake of sharing that account. And once we realized just to be ourselves with on social, and no matter what that means, authenticity, right? I mean, I hate all these words. It's like saying cloud, right, in my world.
I think
social media people. I think social media people have the same trite word, right? I say cloud and automation and orchestration. And I'm saying the same things over and over. And in social, it's, you know, be yourself, be authentic, be real. But those are trite and real because they have real meaning, right? I mean, the reason that they're so overused is because it's true. And I think people that veer from the core of being authentic and being real and not, you know, not trying to be so viral. That was one of the detriments at a previous job, is every, you know, trying to get the next viral thing. None of that's going to work. It's a long cycle, in order to be, to build your personal brand and your personality. And I mean, you guys have had all kinds of podcasts on that. But if I'm going to tell somebody to dive into this and start to weave it into their DNA as a salesperson, they need to, you know, be authentic and use simple tools and start slowly.
What a great conversation right there. Start slowly. Stop trying to jump to the end.
Stop trying to do so many things, right? I mean, I've done a lot of things in my career. We tried to do a small business of selling of a sandwich shop, right? And it was a franchise, and you could tell they started to jump the shark when – oh, here's another word, jump the shark. They tried to do breakfast, right? And it's a sandwich shop trying to do breakfast to get that 1% or 2% incremental revenue, right? And it was a pain in the ass for all of us. It was, you know, the employees had to be in earlier and all that stuff. So when you get away from your core and try to do these things, this to drive 1% or 2% more, it's – you know, it's not worth it, right? Get back to your core. Get back to doing things that matter and just do something. I hate to sound like a Nike commercial, but just do it. Just do something.
Hey, Scott, I have a question, a slightly different tack to take this conversation. And so I think we've buttoned up on social. I understand it now.
We're all in favor.
Yeah. We're all in favor of it.
But
yeah.
You guys get social? Oh, my God.
Well, one quick thing, though. Do you think social media people are self-loathing? That's another podcast. Discuss. No, I don't mean to derail you, John.
I don't know. So for social media people are self-loving, and that's the problem.
Selfie.
So,
oh my God, let me take a selfie right now as we're doing this. Make sure.
Where's my phone?
Yeah, a little humility would go a long way in certain quarters. Hey, so here's what I wanted to ask. Since we got you here, Scott, I'm interested in IT buying cycles, B2B buying cycles, long-term relationship buying. And I am interested in how the technical marketing, the technical sales part comes into the cycle, because often we deal with on the corporate side, on the vendor side, we deal with technical influencers. And, you know, sometimes the question is, well, where are they in the buying cycle? Where are they in the buying center? Why are you messing with this? And why aren't we just, you know, everybody always just wants to sell to C-level, right? Why aren't we selling to the CIO? And it's because I fully believe that in certain parts of the buying cycle, you need the technologist there to tell you what's going on. The CIO reads an in-flight magazine and just makes shit up. So, Scott, where do you find yourself and your contacts and what you do for your unit most useful? Is it the beginning, the middle, the end? I have some ideas, but I'm actually never been in the field, so most of my I'm like Jane Goodall with the chimpanzees.
I just observe. Watching the chimpanzees sell technology.
Exactly. That's who I am. I live amongst them. We get along great, but I am not a chimpanzee. So Scott, if you could run with that question wherever it was.
That question was all over the map. Well, sales cycles. So I've been doing this pre-sales role, I would say 20 years, and it's always been the beginning of the sales cycle is where you have, I mean, you always hit pre-sales at the beginning of the sales cycle, right? Not at the very beginning, but right into the second and third. If you were to say there were like seven stages of selling, it's right in the second or third stage of the sales cycle. And then when you're actually closing, you might or might not have to come back in towards the end just to wrap some things up of, you know, technical things that the customer didn't understand, or we got to nail down, or we got to make sure that things happen. But it always starts in the beginning of laying the groundwork of the technology, right? Because like you say, there's people that read the in-flight magazines and they have no idea. They think it's doing this, that, or the other, and they're totally wrong on how the technology works. And if you don't hit them in the beginning, then their mind just, you know, feeds on these, you know, misconceptions, and it gets to the very end and they're like, well, I thought I could do this. Like, whoa, wait a minute. We never, you know, addressed that in the very beginning.
So I'm reminded of that video that was going around a while back, a few months back, about the techie come in, please draw seven perpendicular green lines in red ink.
On boards. Yeah.
We'll link to that. Well, do you feel like technologists have more or less traction these days? I mean, they have access to so much more information online, demos, simulators. You know, we really have the whole universe at our fingertips. Do you feel like that's made the technologists more or less important?
More important, from the simple fact that there's too much information. Right. I find myself nowadays curating more of the information, right? I, from a technologist point of view, I love that there's so much information because I have so much to draw upon when I go to customers and can weed through right what they need. But they are customers are so involved with what their business and right what they have going on day to day. Yes, there's a lot of information, but they don't necessarily have the time. Right. So as a pre-sales technical person, it's my job to get the relevant information in front of them. And nowadays they're just feeling that there's so much and they can't wade through it and they don't know what's important and what's not important. And it's my job to, you know, go through their business needs and figure out, you know, what is important for this particular customer on this particular day. So for me, it's great. There's a lot of information and you know, it's great for the customers, but they just feel so overwhelmed with it. I hear that over and over again.
That's a great answer, and also fits with my preconceived notions. So, good
job. Win.
I'm glad I could answer the question exactly as you wanted it.
So, I've got one. As we wrap up, I've got one question in closing. I always like to ask people, what if you had one thing to either warn people off of, or some tactic, something you've done that you would never do again, besides ask a lady if she was pregnant inadvertently. In this realm, the conversation we're talking about, if you had one piece of advice you could hand to anybody and say, please don't do this, what would it be?
Don't leave dead air on a podcast.
we do that all the time.
I'll edit that out.
No, I was just setting that up. To not do. You know, I like to tell people what to do. So if I tell somebody what not to do, don't be an a-hole.
Well, there you go. Right? See?
Or, I mean,
it doesn't mean you were an a-hole. You can also do a things, mistakes you've made, or advice not to do, what not to do, or a mistake you've made.
I would say early on I was pretty snarky. I don't know how long Twitter goes back and saves all the tweets, but you know, I was pretty snarky and created a lot of arguments with a lot of people that were just ridiculous. You don't have to be that way, right? You don't have to create the flame wars. There's so many flame wars that go on, and that, right, that's existed since the dawn of time, right? Since bulletin boards. That's never going to change on the new technology. There's going to be people that are flaming back and forth. Just be nice, right? I don't understand why people have to be so. I like sarcasm, I like wit, and I like all that. But some things get out of control. I don't see that so much in our community, right? But I see it in other communities that I follow. That and save early, save often, put as much money in your 401k as you can.
I like it.
Yeah, I'm headed for early retirement, and if I hadn't started saving when I was, you know, starting in the very beginning, then I wouldn't be in this place. So
that is good advice.
That's always good advice.
Social and otherwise. Well, I think we've determined that 90% of our viewing or listening audience is self-loathing, and the other part we've alienated. So I think we've done good work tonight. And in all seriousness, Scott, really appreciate you coming on. I really enjoy watching you on Twitter. Where else can people find you? Is that's pretty much Twitter or Facebook if you're lucky?
Facebook if you're lucky, if you get in the inner circle. I do blog occasionally on CiscoServerGeek.com. And that's really it. Other than that, you can find me hanging out at my Loco SoCo BroCo events.
Excellent. Well, appreciate your time. And again, for anybody out there, good words of wisdom of be yourself and get out there and to quote the Nike, just do it. So.
What? Other people? Is this a podcast? What? I thought we were just having a conversation. Damn it.
Just whispering. And with that, we're going to close out. Until next time, if you enjoyed the Geek Whisperers this week or any week, please give us a like, some stars, a thumbs up, tell a friend, share it with your mom. These are the things that keep us going. So we appreciate your time, and we look forward to talking to you again.
You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as J. Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.
I actually thought the lady sea monkey was kind of hot.
John, you're drunk.
This is the best episode ever.